Are your kitchen and bathroom remodels a little overdue? Well, now's your chance to call First Response Contracting. John Sellers will take care of you. 484-256-7136. They do residential and commercial, and they're licensed and insured. Give them a call at 484-256-7136. Hello, this is Brad Wiseman, and you're listening to Real Estate in You. I have a repeat guest. Well, I don't know if I want to call him that because, you know, it sounds kind of weird calling you a repeat guest, but it's Justin Perella from Annie Mac Mortgage. He's going to be here the third Thursday of every month at around 1 o'clock because we're not the most prompt people in the world. But yeah, he's back in the studio here. We're going to talk about mortgages, of course. And Justin, how you doing, man?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Did you ever feel like there's a take two on something?
Yes, I just experienced that not too long ago.
Just like deja vu a little bit. What you don't know is if you're listening to the podcast, this is the second time we're doing the intro for this, so it's kind of interesting. But we wanted to get into mortgages right away. There's so much about mortgages, and I think every time we do the show, we try to pick up something different, something that maybe the public will enjoy, or not enjoy, just that education is what this is about. So you were telling me you had actually done some preparing for this, which is awesome. And you were talking about income, and there's, I guess, the way we look at income as a non-mortgage person, and the way you look at income maybe are two different things. So tell me, let's talk about approving clients based on their income. What's the income part of a mortgage approval?
It's a great question, Brad. I'm glad you asked. I've been seeing it recently that there's two types of clients: clients that are surprised at what they can afford.
And those, surprised in that they can afford more than what they thought, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's typically your seasoned buyer, your second time buyer. First time buyers are a little different. They're most of the time surprised they can't buy more. But you got to understand that there's ratios that we all have to work within, and we can get into the,
and this is called your debt ratio. Correct.
It's called debt to income ratio, DTI.
Well, that's the word that people use. And a lot of times I think, your buyers will kind of fog over when you say something like that. So, you know, so the debt to income ratios, what does that mean? Explain, what does that mean?
Right. So the good news in the mortgage world is we use gross.
Yeah. Gross income.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gross income. So a lot of people that are surprised that they're getting as much approval as they are the ones that are looking at their pay stub and what they actually make. Right. So we tell them they make $5,000 a month. They're like, well, I see about three of that.
Yeah.
So, but what we do is we take the upfront gross and we calculate it based on whichever program they're going to go into. And we can get into that. But once we have all of their income, so it's my job to get everything up front. So it's not
So all the income has to come in.
Everything.
Right.
But that's our job to find that.
Okay. Okay.
So
got it.
You know, I'm not an accountant, I'm not a CPA, but at the same time, we have underwriters and we have scenario groups that we can go to on trickier income, and trickier income would be, like we talked about last month, was rental property income. Small businesses right now are getting, I don't want to say hammered, but you know, if you have a small business, whether you're a, you know, cut hair and you have your own business, or really, you better have a profit and loss ready to come up with, because they want to see, due to COVID, they want to see current income and where you're at.
Now, when you're self-employed, are we looking at 2 years, 1 year? Like how much?
Correct. Everything's based on 2 years, typically.
2 years. So if I just started a new business, an LLC, and it's doing well and everything's good and my first year's under my belt, I really need to wait to the second year's under my belt.
If that's your only income, yes. But if that is going to be ancillary income, like you've set that up, you have a sales job.
Yeah.
And you're making a commission with that, and you do it for 2 or 3 years, and then all of a sudden you decide you want to sell Tupperware.
Right.
You know, and then you're going to create an LLC. Yes, for us to use that income, you would have to be doing that consistently for 2 years. Now, on the flip side, how can that hurt you? Mm-hmm. Well, we have to show it. So if it's on your tax return, even that 1 year, and you're showing them big loss, that's
got it. Because because when you're talking about business, you're going to be taking out the expenses of so it could actually be a negative number.
Correct, 1,000%. Not so good. It's not just extra income.
So what I'm learning is you're using gross, not net. So when they tell you what their income is, a lot of times people might even tell you their net, because they're sitting there going, "Well, my take home is probably $25,000." Well, that means your gross is probably $40,000. You know,
correct.
With taxes the way they are,
and that's why it's so important. Like when we ask clients for documents, it's not just
not to be nosy
or to fill a bucket. I mean, is in the underwriter's eyes, but that's after we've calculated all the numbers. But for anybody that's a W-2 employee, it's pretty straightforward.
Right, got it.
That's what they make. You know,
on there. There's no hiding anything. There's right. And they're not deleting. They're not taking expenses out or anything like
Typically not.
Yeah. So that makes sense. So okay. So we learned a little bit about that. The ratio thing has to do with also your expenses, right? The debt to income, because we're talking debt and we're talking income. So car payments and things comes off of your income, right?
Correct. So the way we look at it is the gross income minus your debts, and then whatever the percentage is. So if it's 50%, then you take that number and divide it by that. And so let's just use 120,000 you make a year is 10,000, obviously a month gross. Mm-hmm. You take that number and your car payment's 500. You have a personal loan for 500. Mm-hmm. That's 1,000. So now you're $9,000. Let's say you have another 250 in credit cards and then student loans. So all that is getting deducted. And then based
what's left over
divided by or multiplied by the percentage we can approve you for is what your max payment can be.
Got it. Yeah. That's important stuff. So, you know, and this is why it's so important for people to get pre-approved. When they're looking at a home, because there's a lot of things that go into it. And like you said, I think many times people are surprised by what they are actually qualified to purchase. Doesn't mean you have to use all that. Right. I mean, I tell people that all the time. You still want to be able to go out and eat at McDonald's sometimes, you know?
Yeah, we try to put it in perspective of, you know, what do you feel comfortable with? Like, so that's the first question. If I have a client that's going to be approved, let's just say for a $500,000 mortgage, but you know, they want to move in to be a little bit more reasonable, I'll let them know where I think their sweet spot is. But ultimately, the client's got to make the payment, not me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you got to be comfortable. And you want, like I said, you want to be able to do other things too, you know?
Correct.
So you had some of the other things that you had written down was about cosigners. This is, you know, we've dealt with this before, the whole cosigner thing. What does a cosigner mean? And I think also on the other side, the cosigners know exactly what they're getting into when they cosign.
They should. Yeah. It's tough because if you're in a position where you need to ask somebody for help to piggyback on their income, there's two ways it can go. They can have good, you could have good income and good credit, or in some cases we have clients that have good income, but bad credit or vice versa.
Right.
Credit,
right.
So it's not as easy as it sounds just to pick a cosigner out of the blue.
And it's a huge commitment for the cosigner.
It is. We typically see parents are the majority of the cosigners because they understand and trust, you know, but they're obligated. It's their loan.
Right. So, and let's just correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. What I gathered from what you are as a cosigner, because I've seen this in situations where the person that cosigned is now looking to purchase a home. And they go to purchase a home, say to them, "You know, you have a mortgage already on your name." And
no,
they're
that's
like,
my daughter's.
"No, that's my daughter's. I just co-signed," and I'm like,
"You just got a mortgage."
Exactly. Yeah, you don't know it, but you own a house already, just so you know.
Yeah.
So no, and I think it's really, really important that whoever's co-signing knows that this goes against this is a debt against you. It's a great thing to do if you can do it. And if the parents have the ability, that's wonderful. But I think it's good on both sides that they have to understand. Now, you have two people looking to purchase, whether husband and wife or not, doesn't matter. One has credit that's marginal. Mm-hmm. The other one has fantastic credit. How does the interest rate get decided? Is it go by the lowest one or go by the average?
Great question. Lowest one, but do we need the other one?
That's the question.
What we ask.
What if he's the earner?
Yeah, then we need him.
So then you need him. So yeah. So you need the higher earner because of the income.
Yeah.
And but the credit's going to be the interest rates can be based on or the program, because at that point it could be FHA.
Correct.
Right.
So that brings up a couple of great points. So yes, we do use it's a big misconception. Well, they have higher credit, so
let's average it together.
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah.
But it's not. And just to go into that a little further on the cosigner. The one thing that I try to do, and just to go back real quick, is I try to make it as temporary as possible.
Gotcha.
So, for example, if I'm putting a cosigner on for, it could be because they've only been in their job for a year and a half, and their wife's been in for 2 years. But you know, the other party, the husband and wife, are going to be, the husband's going to make more income in a half a year. Well, let's look to refi them off. Let's get you in the home and refinance you off. So that's one of the things I try to set expectations on. This isn't for life that you're signing this cosigner. You're not a cosigner for life. So, and then.
And we did that recently on a deal. I know we did.
Yeah.
I remember it was a couple that we had to bring a parent in, and they helped them out, which was great. But they're going to be hopefully refiing soon to get that person off and then to bring the wife back.
It could be credit. Maybe their credit, think about it this way. Their credit might have been below a threshold that we couldn't approve them for a certain better program. So we added a mom to be able to remove one of the income people that had lower credit. But they're working on their credit and their credit goes up. Or if you add them to the mortgage and they pay on time, their credit's going to go up. So it works a couple different, it's going to help you. And if you can co-sign, it really.
If you can get that. Yeah, if you can. Let's move on to the next one. And we could have actually talked about this in this conversation, but the ratios are different depending on whether it's FHA or conventional. And this is what, you know, sellers ask me when we get these offers that come in, multiple offers, you know, what's the big difference between, you know, FHA and conventional? As a seller, what's the big difference? And I always say one of the things is the ratios. They allow more debt. The debt to income ratio is higher with FHA than it is with conventional.
We can use more of your income on FHA, and that's why first-time home buyers, it's a good program for them. And FHA is not a swear word. It's a great program, but we talked about it, FHA versus conventional. For some reason, sellers are – well, not for some reason.
Well, it's a competitive market. So in a competitive market, extremely competitive – I shouldn't just say competitive. Extremely competitive market.
It's off the charts.
It's off the charts competitive. You know, because – right now, FHA, I mean, it's as great of a program as it is, and it's people in the past, most of our sales were FHA for the longest time. Right. It was a lot of times a better rate. You could include more of your income. It was more forgiving on credit scores, you know, all those things. Yep. Now, you know, things have changed, and that's only because, it doesn't mean you're a bad buyer.
Nope.
It's just because it's so competitive.
Yeah.
And what happens is, you know, when you have a choice –
sure.
Between conventional and FHA, when all things are equal, you know, price is the same, no inspections.
It's a good question. Yeah. What if it's not equal? Like, so well, if I've got an FHA and I'm $5,000 over ask and conventional, are they taking the conventional even though it's $5,000 less, or are they taking the money?
If it's over full price, I'm taking the conventional.
Oh,
and you know why? Because you got to worry about the appraisal. There's no money because you're looking at 3.5% down.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, if the conventional is 10% or 15% or 20% down.
Gotcha.
Now you know that there's a spread there that if it doesn't appraise,
they can still come
we have some money we can come up with. So FHA is not a bad thing. It's a good loan. It's a great loan. It gives a lot of people opportunity in the past and still to this day. It's just because the market is so competitive, it's getting picked apart.
Yeah,
that's really what's happening.
And for the buyer, the only difference that they see above that is the mortgage insurance, which on FHA, if you didn't know, it does not go away. So mortgage insurance is something you carry on your property until you have 20% equity. At 20% equity on a conventional, once you have that $100,000 home, mortgage is $80,000 or lower. That mortgage insurance goes away on FHA. You have to refi out of it.
Yep.
Which again, let's say you have a cosigner.
Yeah.
Let's say you got to go FHA. You refi out, and now with $500 appraisal, you can hopefully get your. I mean, look at homes.
Yeah. You could probably do it within a year and a half. You know, get some of that equity out of there quickly. You know, just get to the 20% mark really fast. Actually, so before we wrap this up, one of the other questions. What do you recommend for clients that have a higher debt to income ratio?
Yeah.
What do they do?
I tend to get this a lot because I grew up in this. I grew up in the financial business, but helping people with these things before I got into mortgages. So, one of my stronger suits is making sure that I can work with the client to get them into the best program as quickly as possible. So, in this case, FHA to conventional. I want to try to get you conventional if we can make it work. But one of the ways we can make it work is to look over your credit report with you, identify which are the higher payments. Not necessarily the higher balances, but
payments.
The payments.
I tell people that all the time. It doesn't matter if you owe $1 million. If it's only 10 bucks a month, that's all that matters.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So by structuring it that way, and in some cases, they want to put 10% down. Maybe it makes sense to put 5% down and pay that off with the other $5,000.
That's a good idea. And that's another thing. That's why it's good to come into somebody like you who's sitting there looking at the big picture. Mm-hmm. You get all the information in. It's like anything. Let's bring it all in.
Yep.
Let's put it on the table and let's look and see what makes the most sense.
Yeah. And it's not just me either. I just want people to know, like, I have a team that helps checks and balances. So that's important to know too, that you're
absolutely
not just getting me. That's, I always,
you got Trish.
Yeah.
You got what's Trish and what's the other girl's
Abby,
name?
Abby. Adriel, yep. I have they're all, partners. Yep.
Yeah. They're great. They're awesome. A really good job. So is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up this edition of JP's Mortgage News?
I think we're good. I appreciate you having me on.
No problem, man. I love it too. It's good stuff. And you know, there's always something to talk about when it comes to mortgages. Always something to talk about.
Oh, write them in.
What's that? Oh,
write
in your questions. That's true too. Just write them in on, put them on the Facebook page for Real Estate and You. And then that way we get a chance to look at these questions. We just got something from Jordan Kreitz that said, two of my favorite people. Well, isn't that nice? So kind, so kind. All right, so there you have it. That's Justin Perella from Annie Mac Mortgage. And he's going to be back on the third Thursday of every month at 1 o'clock. All right, we'll talk to you later.